No doubt, in the name of sincerity, people often express their lack of the sense of beauty, saying, "I'm a frank person. I tell the truth. I don't mind how you take it." This shows that sincerity void of the sense of beauty is lack of balance. And beauty void of sincerity is lack of balance also. As music depends upon rhythm and tone, so personality depends on the sense of beauty and sincerity. Any thoughts or questions about that? The whole thing?
No, just that last sentence.
No doubt, in the name of sincerity, people often express their lack of beauty, saying, "I'm a frank person, I tell the truth, and I don't mind how you take it." This shows that sincerity void of the sense of beauty is lack of balance. And beauty void of sincerity is lack of balance also. As music depends upon rhythm and tone, so personality depends on the sense of beauty and sincerity. As music depends upon rhythm and tone, so personality depends on the sense of beauty and sincerity.
I was reminded of a rather simple aphorism, and it uses the word kind, and I think it refers to it in a different way than the kind of kindness I spoke about earlier. But that's when you say something, think about whether it is true, then think about whether it is necessary. And then think about whether it's kind.
Mm-hmm. Well, the trick is sometimes the kindest thing can also appear to be the most harsh. Upon first glance. It's a very subtle thing, but to... It's kind of a mindfulness or skillfulness is what the Buddhists call it. To be awake to each moment, to know when the moment is there to say that harsh word that can be the blow to the heart that can break it open so that the light can come out. Or to remain silent. You see, it goes both ways. I remember there was a student of mine who was an academic student, and he was really very brilliant, but he was really, really sick. I mean, to the point where he actually thought he was the messenger. Do you know what I'm saying? And everyone just kind of either A, ignored him, played along with him, tolerated him, and at one point, he was calling long distance to have these conversations with me. And I'm like, you know, you're not the prophet. Your own life isn't very together. So I don't think you can be the prophet to all of us if you can't manage your own life. And then, I mean, and he was an adult, but I said, I want to speak with your parents. And I told him, you cannot call back until you go see a doctor. You've got to see a doctor. It probably saved his life. And later he said, I was so angry with you. I mean, I was pretty harsh and brutal with him and direct. But he went and he got the proper help that could bring himself back into balance so he could really express his creativity and his intelligence without destroying himself and ruining all of his relationships. Now, was that kind or was that brutal? I don't know. Maybe it was brutally kind. Do you see what I'm saying? So we can't just go one way or another. There's that slippery slope we can get on. We can fall into a kind of passivity where we excuse everything, or we can fall into a kind of brutality where we think we know everything. I mean, it is really a slippery slope. And I think that's one of the reasons we have to study, 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 and practice, practice, practice. To thine own self be true. To know thyself is to know God. I have no idea what time it is. It's a lot to think about, isn't it? It's really quite profound. It can be life-changing if we let it be. Yes.
And well, in light of what you just did, spoke to us, thinking earlier about what you said about when those things come at you, the reaction that we have is either to absorb or, and I loved what you said, do not accept what you say, I hear what you say, but I don't have to take it as truth.
That's right.
And these two teachings definitely go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
This is a harsh world.
Yeah.
But for us to be able to walk in peace this way is to have changed that.
Uh-huh. I think so too. It's a little bit, you know, there's kind of the term the spiritual warrior. People don't like when I say that because they're like, oh, you're being so aggressive. You know, whatever. But, you know, you have to be a little, I mean, it's a beautiful saying when you really understand what that means. First of all, the great battle is with oneself.
Mm-hmm.
There's the great jihad, they would say, the inner battle, the inner war. It's not external at all. It's battling with oneself. That's what these teachings are about, to try to gain that control or balance. And it's an honorable path, and it's a path of the spiritual warrior to do that. And, you know, it's like an oarsman that becomes very strong. That person can help other people across that rocky ocean. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Or I like the image of the lighthouse. It's very clear and bright and can take the crashing of the waves, of the storms, but the beacon for others. And it's our heritage, our divine heritage, to be that, if we so choose. Again, an icon says the difference between the plant and man or human being is free will. And it's a choice. You know, we have this gift of life and this gift of intelligence and this gift of free will. And how are we going to use it? You know, are we just taking up space, air, resources? We're giving something back. You know, what's our legacy? I have this burning prayer that the whole world will sort of wake up. You know, wake up. At the same time, wake up. And see that divinity within. Where can it be if it's not here now? If we could greet each other like kings and queens, great noble beings.
That we are.
That we are. Mm-hmm. And not just the people we like. Which is really a challenge. But to reflect that back. Or to just be it. Any other comments or questions? Do you like these teachings?
Mm-hmm.
Is this a good path we're going towards?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a whole body of them, like the breath practices, but I think it's just beautiful. And I think this was, again, you know, no one's worshiping an icon, believe me. It's not about that at all, but it's, you know, that amazing vision that he brought out of India to the West of this kind of universal vision of people respecting each other and understanding each other and seeing that we're not different. We're more alike than we are different. And celebrating the differences, not trying to make it a stew or a mashed potatoes, but, you know, celebrating the beauty of the different spices and delicacies that all the different cultures and religions bring. That was his great legacy that he's left.
I'm reminded by some of what we talked about today. Janet Taylor down at Unity leads a Buddhist meditation every Sunday. She will say, imagine you are a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
You're sitting there breathing as a mountain. And seeing the ripples or how people might throw stuff at you, you know, and contemplating on that a little bit, rather than the quick response.
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit like, you know, if you just look at nature too, it's that, you know, when you are at the ocean and a big wave comes towards you, if you stand there just like this, waiting for it to come, it's gonna bam, knock you down. But if you turn to the side and just go into it, it flows right by you. You know, that's what the value of the martial arts is too, to learn the force that's coming at you, to use that to let it just move past, right?
I always am so intrigued by people that, you know, push my buttons,
mm-hmm.
sometimes, because it seems like that's been the greatest teachers to me at all, because, you know, you look inside and you see, well, what is it really in me that's reacting to this, and I kind of see this as being part of these teachings, too.
It totally is, mm-hmm. And, you know, I think a lot of you in the room know my friend Patty Cato, Habiba is her initiation name. And, you know, she would always say in her New York accent, because she loved Carl Jung, and she'd always say, wow, that person's just shadowing you. They're showing you who you are, you know. And it's true, you know, that it is in some aspect that maybe is hidden from our view, but it resonates somehow and it really irritates us, you know, or it's something that we wish we could be a little bit more like. Sometimes that's it too. Oh, well, they're taking such liberties. Just look at who they think they are.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we a little bit maybe wish we could be a little more like that. Sometimes that's part of it. It's a really interesting thing to watch.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it can be a very subtle teaching in that, they can open it up, even though, I mean, your first reaction is to withdraw and just to, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, that happened with the Sufi teacher that I had, and I was doing Zikr, and, oh my gosh, all of a sudden, I mean, usually when I'm in Zikr, I'm just in a state of union, but my mind was just, like, flipping around like crazy.
Yeah.
And I thought, what is going on? I mean, and it was in reaction to this
mm-hmm.
person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, that night I had a dream about him giving me this dervish hat. And, you know, my ego was really not really wanting to approach him. And I eventually did that day, and it was just like an entire ocean of love that we were just to go. And it was a very, very special gift.
It was an opening. Sometimes that opening is, you know, it's kind of like the door that needs a little bit of oil. You know, when it's not well oiled, or you know, it just doesn't want to open. And sometimes there are places in our being aren't there that do that.
Do you think we're a little bit like what it was in
Leo?
That we just have to flip our life around the map, and we have to get it just right so we can get comfortable enough.
Yeah, I don't know that we have to do it. I think it gets done to us sometimes, you know, where we want to wake up to that. I remember being, when living in India, I was really very involved in a lot of practice, you know. And I had really, I always worked very diligently with my Sufi practices on a daily basis. And of course, I think most of you know I was raised Catholic, and I still feel very connected to that tradition, and found a Catholic church in the area, and also just inwardly in my daily practice, I have a kind of invocation and connection to say a prayer of the saints. And I was very involved in the preliminary practices of the Tibetan Buddhism, and very deeply involved in practice for that year. And I remember that, and service also, I was involved in service, but that was part of the practice, that is the practice as well, as far as I'm concerned. But here's the deal. The more I practiced, the more I thought I was becoming a really bad person. You know, like everything came up and I was looking at it, and every little thing about, every little thought, you know, they were probably always there, they were just hidden. But I just thought, I mean, I even asked Joe last night, it's like, do you think I'm becoming a worse person? I mean, I just feel sometimes I'm so wrathful. You know, I'm a wrathful emanation of something, I think. But at any rate, I asked a lama. I said, it wasn't my own teacher, but it was a opportune time to ask it because I was feeling it so much. And I remember saying to this person, I said, you know, what do you think's going on? Because it feels like I'm doing all these purification practices, but I feel like inwardly I'm more polluted than ever. And, you know, he said, it's coming to the surface. And it's, in that tradition, it's a little bit of a different view because they believe that we accumulate these things lifetime upon lifetime. And they're latent within our being, and at some point something triggers them and they come to fruition and then get lived out, actualized, purified, whatever. So his explanation was these things were coming to the surface for purification, but it was like, you know, it wasn't a pretty place to be. And I think that, you know, there are great beings that give us these teachings. Saint John of the Cross is one of them in The Dark Night of the Soul. He talks about this spiritual journey in a beautiful and profound way. Saint Teresa of Avila in The Interior Mansion talks about this journey of this going from this outer world to the inner world, and you know how perilous it can be. These are great teachings to study because they're kind of a map. When you're in those places where you might feel you're a little bit in a dark night, it's like, oh my God, has anyone else ever been here? And how do they get through it? And that really gives one a great deal of hope and faith to be able to sort of read that, oh, you know, this great illuminated being walked this way, and it is part of the path. it helps to encourage us instead of discourage us. Now, there may be other, that's from my background and that's part of my cosmology, but there may be other teachings. But even my own Tibetan Buddhist teacher said to me, Komtul Rinpoche, that in his view, the Christian mystics are probably amongst the greatest bodhisattvas. I mean, they've lived those real lives of service and charity and self-effacement, and that's those are great blessings and teachings to study that. To study that, Padre Pio is another one. Recent, you know, person, Saint Teresa. I call her Saint Teresa. She's a Mother Teresa. You know, I mean, she talks about, you know, all those years of just being in kind of utter darkness while she was doing what she was doing. Imagine being, I don't know who's been maybe to Calcutta, but I assure you I've been there. I know what that place is like. It's like a hell on earth. Even the Indians don't like to go there. And she worked there amongst the poor, the crippled, the abandoned, the lepers, tirelessly. Where did she get that source of inspiration? In the darkness. It's really extraordinary to study their writings and teachings. Padre Pio, 30, St. Francis, 2-3 years. St. Gemma, 2-3 years. 30 years with the stigmata in his side, in his hands, in his feet, open wounds. And masses of people coming to him, so inspired. And you know what the papacy did? They told him, you can't give mass publicly. If you give mass, you serve it to yourself in a closed place. They wouldn't let him teach. People wrote him letters all the time for spiritual direction. They said no more letter writing. 20 years, they wouldn't let him meet with his spiritual director. A real persecution. And you know what? He did. Mm-hmm. Absolute silence. And people would say, why are they doing this to you? He said, it's the will. I must take this. And they're great beings. They're ordinary people that rose to greatness because they mastered themselves and struggled with this. The quote from The Death of the Salesman keeps going through my mind this week. Most men live lives of quiet desperation. Are we those people? Or do we want to walk the path of illumination? Whatever it is, take it up. Take that up as your banner, as your torch. Whatever path it is, it doesn't matter. And free yourself from all conventions and opinions. Because then you will be free. Anayat Khan talks about the path of indifference and independence. That doesn't mean you don't care. It means you care greatly. But above others' opinions, others' judgments, and one's own too. He talks about that as the Sufi symbol, that the two wings, one's independence and one's indifference. We're indifferent to the fancies of the world and we're independent of convention. You understand? Being in the world but not of the world. In the world, but not of the world. Dalai Lama would say, if we're unhappy, we can be assured we're thinking too much about ourselves. Yeah, we're full of self-thought. And so that's a really good thing. If you're feeling unhappy, think about doing something nice for another person. It makes you think in a bigger way out of one's own scope. And also in Buddhism, Murshid would call it virtue or non-virtue. The Buddhists call it wholesome or non-unwholesome. Wholesomeness are things that make us, it's a beautiful word really, when you think of things being wholesome, they're kind of complete and full and fresh. And so sort of take those words, if you like, and think about making things wholesome. You know? Are there any other comments or?
I just would. No.
Romaine and then Jim.
I just wanted to ask you, where did you say one would go after the inner darkness? Just the common literature or?
There, for the text that I was mentioning. Yes, one text that is really wonderful is called The Dark Night of the Soul by St. John of the Cross. And the other book is called The Interior Mansion, or sometimes it's translated The Interior Castle by St. Teresa of Avila. It's very helpful to look at that journey, you know, and to have someone that sort of shows you that, this is where it's going, this is what it might feel like, this is what it might look like.
But it's for practice of a Sufi, you just continue your way and then it takes its own path, they'll go away.
To be the practice of the Sufi, especially this line of Inayat Khan, includes all of these things. I mean, it's not an exclusive, like, oh, we only study Hazar and Icon, we study it all. It's you might find that these teachings are also beneficial, though, from the Christian mystics. I think that it's all connected. Jesus came from the Middle Eastern region. He was involved in that culture, that flavor. And I especially embrace these great Christian martyrs and saints that are women. St. Teresa of Avila was living at a time when the church was quite finicky, and anything that was written was heavily edited. Do you know not one word of her text was edited? You found it that complete. And that sort of truthful and honest to that inner journey. It's pretty extraordinary. And also, when she referred, I like to share this, when she referred to sons of glory, which we hear that term a lot, in the translation of her text from Spanish, sons is spelled S-U. N-S. Suns, the light, the radiance, the energetic source. It's not S-O-N-S, sons of glory. S-U-N-S, suns.
But we are also all children of God.
I just wanted to share, you were talking about unhappiness. I was in my basement, and my son has this little journal, and I looked at it, and it says, what to do if you're unhappy? And he's like, think of mom and dad, roller coasters, candy, and stop thinking about that unhappy thought.
That's good advice, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and it's here in those teachings, exactly that. Just shift your thought, shift the lens, shift the breath. Any other comments or questions? Well, if we could stand, now we have two big dogs who are slumbering, so please be mindful. And there's something under the rug there, Paula, that if we could kind of come in this area, please. This gets pushed over there, please. Maybe this one. This one. Leo, you're such a good boy. Those of us that know the prayer Salat, let us say that prayer together. Most gracious Lord, Master, Messiah, and Savior of humanity, we greet Thee in all humility. Thou art the first cause and the last effect, the divine light and the spirit of guidance, Alpha and Omega. Thy light is in all forms, thy love in all beings, in a loving mother, in a kind father, in an innocent child, in a helpful friend, in an inspiring teacher. Allow us to recognize Thee in all Thy holy names and forms, as Brahma, as Krishna, as Shiva, as Buddha. Let us know Thee as Abraham, as Solomon, as Zarathustra, as Moses, as Jesus, as Mohammed, and in many other names and forms, known and unknown to the world. We adore Thy past. Thy presence deeply enlightens our being, and we look for Thy blessing in the future. O Messenger, Christ, Nabi, the Rasul of God, Thou whose heart constantly reaches upward, Thou comest on earth with a message, as a dove from above, when Dharma decay, and speakest the word that is put into Thy mouth, as the light of the crescent of this moon. Let the star of the divine light shining in Thy heart, be reflected in the hearts of Thy devotees. May the message of God reach far and wide, illuminating and making the whole of humanity as one single brotherhood in the fatherhood of God.